It is Wednesday, May 1st, and this is a bonus episode of Pink is the New podcast. Earlier today, I published my regular weekly roundup where I talk about all the pop culture things that happened in the past week, and I did make brief mention of the release on Thursday night of Avengers Endgame, the movie, and the premiere of Game of Thrones Season 8, Episode 3, The Battle of Winterfell on Sunday night. So I mentioned those things in the longer podcast, my earlier one, but I wanted to keep it spoiler-free just in case people who haven't seen either of those two things aren't spoiled and they can listen to the rest of the podcast without worrying about being spoiled. So this bonus episode is to talk about both Avengers and Game of Thrones, and I'm going to spoil it. So this is for those of you who have seen both and want to just hear my take on what I thought about both of those things. So if you have not seen Avengers Endgame, or if you have not seen the latest episode of Game of Thrones, then come back and listen to this later. But for the rest of you, let's talk about it. So, okay. On Thursday night, I went to one of the first showings of Avengers Endgame. And I needed to see it before someone spoiled it for me on social media. And you know the drill. You can't go on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter without someone saying something or posting a funny meme. I'm guilty of it too. We all do it. Most of the time, it's not intentional. Sometimes it is, but you just have to be careful. So it had been such a long buildup for the release of Endgame that I wanted to make sure that I saw it without being spoiled. So I went as early as I could, and I loved the movie. I really did. I ended up seeing it three times this weekend. I saw it in regular showing on Thursday night. And then on Saturday afternoon, I saw it in 3D, which was great. And I love 3D. I try to see 3D as often as I can because it's just more fun. It adds another fun element to watching any movie. And then on Sunday, late Sunday, after I watched Game of Thrones, and that wiped me out emotionally, I was like, I need an emotional palate cleanser. And I went and saw Avengers again in IMAX. And the IMAX version was my favorite version. Huge screen, 40-foot screen or whatever, so much detail. I noticed so many more things just because the screen is so big. So I saw it three times and I loved it. So by now, because you've seen it, you know that the big element in the movie was about time travel. And originally, when I thought about doing this bonus episode, I was going to talk about all the mechanics of the time travel and how they handled it and the quantum realm and alternate realities and all of that. And honestly, like, I took notes, I took like five pages of notes, and then I started talking about it and it just sounded too confusing and it was a mess. So I just can't go into all of the mechanics of how the time travel happened because it doesn't work in this podcast setting. It's better to be read. So there are articles out there that you can read that will give you a better understanding of what happened. But essentially, the time travel rules in this movie are you could travel in the past and make changes and it won't affect your future. So unlike Back to the Future, where Marty McFly goes back in the future and he does things and he changes the future and he has to go back and undo them. It's not like that, nor is it like Star Trek. Star Trek also operates on those time travel rules. They have like the temporal prime directive where it's like completely forbidden to go in the past and change things because it affects the future. That is not the case with Avengers. In Avengers, the past is permanent. So you can always go back in the past and you could change it and do all of these things, bring things out, you know, make changes, and it will not affect the future because, I mean, an easy explanation is like time is a very linear thing. So if you go back in the past, that happens in your present. And the things that you did in the past become, you're always in the present. That's the best way to explain it. You're always in the present. So no matter what you do, you can't change your future based on what you're doing in the past. So yeah, so that's the rules that we're talking about when we're talking time travel in Avengers. It was very satisfying for me, only because, you know, without having to worry about like ruining the timeline and ruining the future, they can do a lot more things. They can go back and forth and do a lot of things. The one thing they couldn't do was to undo Black Widow's death. Now, we know that she sacrificed herself for the Soul Stone, and she did it in the same way that Gamora was sacrificed unintentionally, like Thanos threw her off to get the Soul Stone. She sacrificed herself to get the Soul Stone because the Avengers went back in time to retrieve all of the stones before Thanos destroyed them. So we saw that Thanos, early in the Endgame, he destroyed all of the stones, meaning that what he had done couldn't be undone, except for the fact that they found out through Ant-Man and the Hulk's reasoning, they could travel through the quantum realm, which is where Ant-Man went in his last movie, come out in a different time period, and be in the past. So the only thing that they could not undo was bring back Black Widow. And they didn't really explain it, but from what I gathered, the soul for soul exchange is undoable. So the Infinity Stones can do a lot of things. They can do pretty much anything. But I guess we just have to understand and believe that it just cannot undo a soul for soul exchange for the Soul Stone. So that's why we can't have Black Widow back. Will they undo it in the future? Will they come up with a way to bring her back? Maybe. She has a movie coming up. It's probably going to be a prequel series, so that doesn't really affect this because it'll be in the past. So we'll see. It remains to be seen what will happen with Black Widow. Tony's death was pretty satisfying, only in that it was such a heroic way for him to go. He had been a selfish character for the most part from the very beginning, all 22 movies, and he ended up sacrificing his life to save, you know, all the people that were snapped before. So that I'm okay with. I'm okay with Iron Man, Tony Stark dying, because there will be another Iron Man, hopefully a female Iron Man, Iron Woman, and that character, or the spirit of that character, will live on. Now, Captain America's happy ending, I also liked, and it's interesting because, so we saw that he went back, he was the one who went back in the past to take all the stones back, where they got them from. So the chronological order of events are Thanos destroyed all of the Infinity Stones. Then the Avengers go back in time to retrieve the stones to build a new Iron Gauntlet that Iron Man built so that they could undo what Thanos did and then put the stones back in the past where they got them from. Now this meant that the stones would go back in the past before Thanos destroyed them, meaning that the stones in the present, in 2023, don't exist because Thanos destroyed them in 2018 and they stayed destroyed. Are you with me? So we have to think about these three periods in time. 2023, when the movie takes place, 2018, when Thanos did the snap, and any time before that, when the Infinity Stones existed. So Thanos destroyed the stones in 2018, and in 2023, the Avengers went back before 2018 to various points in time, 2012, 2014, and 1970, to retrieve the stones, bring them back to 2023, undo what he did, and then took them back to the past where they came from before he destroyed them. Meaning that the act of destroying them in 2018 is still in effect and the stones don't exist. Also, there's a thing about I read where when Doctor Strange gave the Time Stone to Thanos, he looked at 14 million realities and he saw the one that would work out for them. And it was the one where he gave him the stone and he put some kind of a time loop on it. Like he cursed it with a time loop, meaning that Thanos being destroyed or undone in 2023, when Tony had all of the stones and he snapped his fingers, that can never be undone. Now, it made sense when I read it, and now as I'm talking about it, it's kind of hard for me to like try and sound convincing, but it made sense when I read it, and that's kind of what we have to go by. So all of that happened, and the happy ending for Captain America was he got to go back in time to return all the stones and Mjolnir. He had to take Thor's hammer back to 2014, I believe. 2012? He had to take it back into the past to make sure that the hammer went back to the right time and the stones went to all the right periods where they were taken from. And then he decided to go back to 2045 or 2047 sometime, I'm sorry, 1945, 1947, back so that he could live a full life with the love of his life, Peggy Carter. Now, we've known for many years that Peggy, when she lost Steve, when he went into the ice and presumably died in 1945, she mourned him for a very long time, but then she got married, had a family, and lived a long life until she passed away, and Steve got to see her on her deathbed. But we never knew anything about the man that Peggy married. We never knew. We knew that she got married. We knew that she had children. We know about her niece. But we don't know anything about her husband. And it occurred to me, isn't it possible that this Steve going back in time to live his whole life with her, that he was the unknown husband that we'd always heard about but never knew about? And Steve in 2023, going back to 1945, would have all the knowledge of when to stay out of sight when the earlier version of him came out of the ice, became a hero, defeated Hydra and all of that stuff. He would have known how to stay out of sight. So it stands to reason that it's possible that there were two Captain Americas from 1940, whatever, until 2012, when the present Captain America went back to 2012 to get back the stones. Remember when he fought himself? When he fought himself, there were two Captain Americas. It's possible there were three. So there was present Captain America in the past fighting with 2012 Captain America. And then there was 2023 Captain America who had also living but staying out of sight because he was living a quiet life with Peggy. It's confusing. It's crazy. But this is what we got. And I kind of love it. I can understand how this is could be confusing. And for casual fans or even like hardcore fans, it could be too much and blah. Like maybe they don't love it. But I loved it. I loved all of that. We now see that now that Captain America is old in the end and he's probably not going to be Captain America anymore, there's going to be a new Captain America. Maybe Sam is going to be Captain America, become the first black Captain America in the movies. That would be amazing. I also want to talk about like Vision. We didn't talk about Vision at all in this movie. His name wasn't even mentioned once, I don't believe. He was only alluded to. He was never mentioned once. My guess is Vision's going to come back. At the end of Infinity War, Shuri was doing something to disassociate his mind from the Mind Stone because the plan back then was to destroy the Mind Stone so that Thanos would not be able to have all the stones and he couldn't snap his fingers and make half the people disappear. But she got interrupted and Vision got killed. The Mind Stone was ripped from his head and then he died. My guess is whatever Shuri did, she was close to being done, and now that she's back after the unsnapping, it's very likely that Vision's going to come back. So I think Vision's going to come back. I think Captain America is going to be Sam, who's going to be black. I think there's going to be a new Iron Man, probably a woman. And the last person I think Black Widow's not going to come back. We'll see. I don't think she's going to come back. And Thor. In this movie, we saw Thor got super depressed about not being able to save the day, and he let himself go, and he turned into, like, the Big Lebowski guy, you know, beer belly, saggy man boobs, and ratty hair, which, for me, was comical and fun. I can see, you know, some people have a problem with it. They thought that it was making fun of obese people and all of that. I didn't read it that way. I kind of took it as, you know, when you go through something, you go through something. And Thor went through a lot. He seemed to have a pretty good attitude about it. And I think that's what made the difference, all the difference to me. They weren't making fun of him for the most part. I mean, they were poking fun, but they always poke fun at each other, but they weren't really being mean about it. And Thor seemed happy with who he was. I mean, he was unhappy, but he was like, you know, this is, you know, I think we're going to get Thor back. He's going to get back in shape with the Asgardians of the galaxy. And I think we're going to see a lot more Thor. So that was Avengers Endgame. That was a lot. Again, I liked it, you know. It was a big story. It was a big story, a little complicated, but in my opinion, it was a great payoff for, you know, 10 years of Marvel movies, and I can't wait to see what they do with the other movies in the future. Black Panther 2, Captain Marvel 2, all of those movies. So, thumbs up for me. Loved it. I'm sure I missed some things. If there's some things that I missed, hit me up in social media, at Trent Venegas on all socials. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I also made an Instagram for the podcast. Pink is a New Podcast on Instagram and on Facebook and on Twitter. Pink is the New Pod, because podcast was too long. So hit me up on social media. Let me know what you thought of the movie. Anything I missed, anything you want me to know, let me know. All right, let's talk about Game of Thrones, The Battle of Winterfell, which was 82 minutes of amazingness. Now, okay, I'm just going to say I loved it. I loved the way that the whole episode played out. You know, in the beginning, it looked like it was going to be an epic showdown, and it kind of was super one-sided. The Army of the Dead really did a number on the living. All the Dothraki got completely decimated in one fell swoop, seemingly, which was like, oh, shit, this is for real. I loved that. I loved how it was paced. It was super tension. There was a high tension for most of the battle. You know, you never knew who was going to die. And in the end, not a lot of people died. Not a lot of people died, which I think was the biggest surprise of all. I think a lot of people, me especially, were bracing ourselves for, oh my God, there's going to be a bloodbath and all of our favorites are going to die. And that really wasn't the case. 7 people died, and I'll mention those in a minute. But, you know, none of the big ones died, which was a relief for me. Some people were disappointed that there wasn't more death. I can understand that as well. But for me, it was a relief. The Night King, man. We spent so much time being afraid of this guy, and it turns out he had a glass jaw, or an ice jaw, like, literally. You know, like, he is super powerful, he could, you know, make the dead rise, and he could make White Walkers, and just a horde, overwhelming number of dead things to be his army. But he was very vulnerable in the end, and we saw that it took one person to end him completely and completely wipe out all of his armies in one fell swoop. So that was also kind of a surprise, but it was so satisfying for me to see how he went and who took him down, which I will get to in a minute, that I was not mad at it. I wasn't mad at it. I'm totally fine with it. It was interesting that we saw that he took full face, like a mouthful of dragon fire from Daenerys when she was riding her dragon. And he just smirked at her and was like, what? That's all you got? So either the Night King was Targaryen, which means Targaryens can't burn, or the Children of the Forest, when they made him, that was one of the magic powers they gave him, that he could be, that he could survive fire. But we may never know. We may never know. Well, in this series, we probably will never know, because there's only 3 more episodes left, and now that the Night King is gone, they probably won't be talking about the Night King anymore. I believe that there's going to be a prequel series, Game of Thrones, down the line in a couple years, that's going to talk about how the Night King came to be, and we'll probably get some more history then. But for this series, I think that's it. So it was a big ol' piece to spork out to the Night King, and he is my official first piece to spork out on Pink is the New podcast. Interestingly, Melisandre, the Red Woman, the Red Witch, played a huge role in this episode. Coming out of nowhere, she rode in. She gave the army, the Army of the North, hope. She gave them fire, which helped them a lot. And she also gave Arya a big boost of confidence, reminding her who she is. She reminded her of a prediction that she made to Arya, I think in season 6, where she told Arya that she would be responsible for killing Brown Eyes, Blue Eyes, and Green Eyes. Now, if you remember, Walder Frey, the guy who orchestrated the Red Wedding and like wiped out half of her family, had Brown Eyes, and Arya killed him and his entire family. And when Melisandre mentioned the Blue Eyes, I think that that's what inspired Arya to be like, you know what, I'm just going to go for the damn Night King, and I'm going to take him out. And she did. And we'll talk about that in a little bit in more detail. But interestingly, she hasn't yet, that I'm aware of, killed someone with green eyes. And you know, but you know who has green eyes? Cersei Lannister has green eyes. So let's just marinate on that for a minute. We know that next week, the preview for the next episode looks that they're going to go down, and they're going to, so the Army of the North, what's left of them, are going to go down to the south and battle Cersei and her legion of rested army men and women and hopefully elephants to try and take the Iron Throne. So is it possible that the prophecy that Melisandre mentioned to Arya, or reminded her of, that she will be responsible for the deaths of a brown-eyed person, a blue-eyed person, and a green-eyed person in the form of Cersei Lannister? Stay tuned. That's very possible. So the Arya scene. So Arya, you know, we have watched her grow up in this series, and she became an assassin, and just everybody loves her for the most part. Everybody loves her, period. She kicks ass. She has earned the respect of so many other characters. Beric, the Knight of Light, who keeps dying over and over and over again because he hasn't served his purpose to the Lord of Light. It turns out that his purpose was to help Arya survive long enough to kill the Night King. And he did that. He helped keep her alive, and then he finally died. The Hound. There's a love-hate relationship with the Hound. He's a terrible character who kind of has some redeeming qualities, and Arya wanted to kill him, but then they kind of became friends during one season when they were stuck together, and now there seems to be some kind of mutual respect. I mean, she doesn't want to kill him anymore, so that's pretty respectful. He froze up during the battle scene. You know, every time we know that he has this issue with fire because he was burned as a child with fire, and we know that he has issues with fire. So he froze up during the battle, and it looked like he was just going to, like, wimp out. And Beric reminded him, dude, Arya's out there. She needs your help. And that woke him up. Like, the Hound will do anything for Arya, we can now determine. And the two of them helped Arya get close enough to take out and destroy the Night King. Now, Arya did this with a dagger made of Valyrian steel that was given to her by her brother, Bran, and he gave it to her right near the spot where she actually used it to kill the Night King. Now, this dagger, which you may or may not remember, goes all the way back to really early in the series when an assassination attempt was put out on Bran's life. He had seen Jaime and Cersei having sex. He knew that they were having an incestuous relationship and that all of her children were not the king's. And to keep that secret, they tried to kill Bran, and they tried to frame Tyrion for it. That dagger made it all the way back to Bran, and he held on to it until he gave it to Arya last season, and she's had it with her all the way up until this episode, and she used it to stab and destroy the Night King. She was so great in this episode. She was strong. She showed that she was fearful, but managed to keep her wits. All of her training saved her in the end, I think. And she managed to whisk through all of these crazy White Walkers and got close enough to surprise the Night King, who grabbed her by the neck and was like, "Oh, I see you. You're not going to get me." And she dropped her blade with one hand, caught it with the other, stabbed him in the gut. Boom, he's gone, which was so satisfying. I screamed. I screamed out loud. I bet you screamed out loud. I could hear half of America, the ones who were watching live, scream out loud. It was an awesome, awesome way for him to go out. That's why I'm not super bummed that the Night King was taken out, because he was taken out in such grand style with such an amazing character, and it was just the perfect the way for him to go out. I'm glad that's the way he went out, and if it was too soon, whatever. We still have 3 more episodes, so there's more story to come, but for all of his big scary big badness, it took one intelligent, powerful, brave young woman to undo everything that he had, his whole existence and his whole army. One fell swoop. Amazing. Now, people were super bummed about, like, it was too dark, I didn't see nothing, blah, 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 blah. Whatever. For me, I like the darkness. I thought that the darkness was a nice touch for the episode. It added to the confusion, because the people in the show, they couldn't see shit either. So we felt like they felt. When Dany and Jon were flying around in their dragons and the Night King brought up that big storm and they couldn't see shit, they couldn't see shit either. They were confused. So we couldn't see shit, we were confused. I could see. I turned off all my lights. I didn't even turn the brightness up on my TV. I just, you know, I could see it. I could tell what was going on. I had to squint a little, but that was part of the fun for me, so I loved it. So people complaining about that, I'm like, whatever. You know, people complaining about lack of a bloodbath, I mean, I get that. For a show like this, I get that. It wasn't a problem for me, so that didn't bother me at all. People were upset that, you know, it should have been Dany, or it should have been Jon, mostly. It should have been Jon to destroy the Night King. To me, that's the biggest bunch of bullshit. Like, why? Jon Snow, great character. I love him. And he's done some very amazing heroic things in the past, and good for him. But setting him up to be the hero again would have been so boring to me. So I'm really glad that that's not how it played out. I'm glad that he wasn't the White Knight hero. And in spite of the fact there are some haters and, God, like these stupid, you know, these asshole guys out there who are trolling, you know, every time there's a female character who does something amazing in a movie or television, there has to be detractors, you know, calling Arya Mary Sue and all this crap. Screw that. The fact that Jon wasn't the hero was a big bonus for me, and I loved it. All right, let's talk about the 7 people who died, and we will piece the spork them out too. So in addition to the Night King, Dolorous Ed, who was the acting Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, he died. He goes back to first season, and he was Jon's buddy at the Wall, a familiar face. So when he died, that was pretty sad. Lyanna Mormont, Lady of Bear Island, that little Spitfire, some calling the true Queen of the North, she died. She wanted to get in the battle, and she was in the battle, and she strapped on, and she did her best. And it took the biggest White Walker to take her down. The big old giant, the literal giant White Walker, crushed her in his hand. Well, first he bashed her with his club, which I thought was going to kill her. She got up, and she was like, "Fuck that, dude. I'm coming for you." And then he grabbed her and literally was crushing her to death when he pulled her up to his face and she stabbed that mofo in the eye with her Valyrian steel or dragon glass, I'm not sure which weapon she had, killing him instantly. So while she ended up dying, she ended up taking the biggest threat after the Night King and after the ice dragon, all her little self. So it was very, very bittersweet to see her go, but she went out like a boss, and I loved it. Beric Dondarrion, the Lightning Lord, the dude with the flaming sword who kept dying and coming back and dying and coming back because he hadn't fulfilled his prophecy. He finally fulfilled his prophecy, it would appear, by helping Arya destroy the Night King, and now that he has fulfilled his prophecy, he died once more and will stay dead. Another sad death was Theon Greyjoy, once Prince of Winterfell, who became Reek, and we all hated him when he was Reek, but then he became a hero. He redeemed himself. He redeemed himself in the eyes of his sister. He redeemed himself in the eyes of the Starks, and in the end, he sacrificed himself to protect Bran against the worst odds. He stepped up to do his best to protect Bran and died as a result of it. But he died a hero. He died a good man. And I think we all are very sad that Theon died, but we're proud of him and his redemption and him coming back home to stand with the Starks and die a hero. Jorah Mormont, Dany's protector, the older dude who followed Dany and just loved her and wanted to be by her. He got the dragon skin and almost died, but then he was healed because Sam figured out the cure and all of that. That guy. I mean, his last breath was fighting to protect Dany from White Walkers, and it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. I know some people cried over his death. I didn't. I got a little teary. I'll tell you, I got a little teary to see Dany so destroyed over how sad she was that he died, but he went out the way he wanted to go out, too. He lived his life protecting Daenerys, and he did so. And then the seventh death, Melisandre, the Red Woman, the Red Witch, after she, gave everything that she had to help the living army. She gave them her counsel. She gave them her magic, her fire magic. She gave Arya the bit of confidence I think she needed to help her fulfill her destiny. Once all that was done, it was time for Melisandre to peace out too. We know that she's thousands of years old, or at least 1,000 years old. And remember that one season where she took off her necklace and we saw that she's actually a really withered old woman? I guess now that she's finished all of her work, she's like, my work here is done. She took off her necklace. She walked out into the snow and kind of like the Thanos snap, she kind of like fell and then drifted away. So those were the seven characters that died. People wanted more. I was happy with what we got. I'm very sad for who we lost, but I think they all went out in pretty spectacular fashion. One more thing I want to say about Arya, and then I'll wrap this up. Oh, one more thing about Arya and then Cersei. So Arya, we know that there's this prophecy about the prince that was promised, and everyone assumed it would be Jon because obviously white guy's got to be the hero. But Melisandre's translation of the prophecy suggested that it could also be a princess. And I don't know that people have been taking it seriously. Maybe they have and have thought, oh, well, then maybe it's going to be Dany. But it seems possible to me that now that we see Arya's strength and the fact that she took out the Night King, that she might be the princess that was promised. And, if she takes out Cersei, and why wouldn't she get the throne? Why wouldn't she get the throne, become the princess, become the queen? Who knows? To be determined. There's three more episodes left, so we'll see. So now that the supernatural threat is destroyed and the Night King and all of the White Walkers are gone, the real villain stands before our heroes, Cersei Lannister, who has been the threat from the beginning She has had it out for the Starks from the very beginning, and she had it her way. They'd all have been killed long ago. She's personally tried to kill each one of them individually. So she is now the big bad, and arguably she's been the big bad all along. You know, the supernatural thing was big and scary, but at the end of the day, the real monsters are the monsters that you see every day, not the ones hiding under the bed. It's the same sort of thing like in The Walking Dead, which is, you know, about zombies. The zombies are terrible and are a threat, but the worst villains in The Walking Dead are the other terrible humans who take every advantage to be terrible humans. Cersei is that kind of character. She is that kind of villain. She is the big bad, and she's the one that whoever is going to win the Iron Throne is going to have to go through. Maybe they won't. Maybe Cersei will win. I don't think that's the case, but looking around at the nightmare hellscape of reality that we live in now and the leadership that we see all around us, it would be such poetic justice to have the worst character on the show win in the end and rule over all. So we'll see. Will it be Arya? Will it be Jon? Will it be Dany? Will it be Tyrion? Will it be Cersei? 3 more episodes and we'll find out. So yeah, that is pretty much all I got. Next week's episode looks like it's going to be great. Another supersized episode, longer than an hour. Cersei has been sunning herself in King's Landing. All of her army troops are rested and probably ready for action. The Army of the North, decimated, probably starving, half of them dying still from, or at least suffering from wounds. Are they up for the challenge? We'll find out. Because these two stories, Avengers and Game of Thrones, were such big stories this week, and they made like such a powerful, powerful pop culture moment, I felt that they deserved their own bonus podcast. So hopefully you enjoyed it. I enjoyed them both. I'm very curious to hear what you think. Again, hit me up on social media or Facebook. Search for me at Trent Venegas, or search for at Pink is the New Podcast. And yeah, let me know what you think. And I'll leave you with this, a reminder. What do we say to the God of Death? Not today, bitches. Bye.